1984, the morning after, a banner day on TV. The game, Chicago White Sox 5, Baltimore Orioles 2, at Memorial Stadium, Baltimore, Maryland. Attendance, 51,333 on Monday, April 2nd, 1984. The weather, sunny and 60s. Hall of Famers, Orioles first baseman Eddie Murray, shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., White Sox catcher Carlton Fisk, pitcher Tom Seaver, and outfielder Harold Baines. Game highlights. In an opening day rematch of the previous year's American League Championship Series, the Chicago White Sox grabbed a small bit of revenge, routing the Orioles on a day that was otherwise picture perfect for the 1983 World Series champions. Cal Ripken Jr. homered in the first, and Eddie Murray drove in another in the eighth. But that's all the scoring the Birds could muster against 1983 Cy Young Award winner Lamar Hoyt and reliever Britt Burns. After a substantial career as a starting pitcher, Burns moved to the bullpen to start the 1984 campaign to make room in the starting rotation for Tom Seaver. Seaver had joined the team when the White Sox plucked the future Hall of Famer from MLB's free agent player compensation pool. He had been left unprotected by the New York Mets. Chicago had lost journeyman pitcher Dennis Lamp in free agency to the Toronto Blue Jays, and Seaver was the make-good. Clearly, the system was still broken. The story. The list of historically significant events all packed into 1 week, both to local sports fans and to me personally, make this year's opening day story draining, exhilarating, nostalgic, and exhausting. Consider that on April 2, 1984, Baltimore sports fans were angry, mourning the loss of their football team. The Colts had bolted to Indianapolis just a few days earlier. At the opposite end of the emotional spectrum, jubilant baseball fans would officially celebrate the Orioles' 1983 World Series championship with the raising of their third championship banner at Memorial Stadium in just 18 years, with the President of the United States throwing out the ceremonial first pitch. Today's game would be televised live on local over-the-air television, WMAR Channel 2, for the first time in team history. 2 days later, a new cable TV channel, Home Team Sports, the channel you cheer for, would usher in a new era in televised sports. Fans would be able to watch most of their team's home games on TV. Similar cable channels were launching in other markets around the country. Oh yes, and during the offseason, I got married, changed jobs, changed my allegiance from the Chicago White Sox to the unthinkable Baltimore Orioles. You see, I now worked for Home Team Sports, HTS. It was a hell of a year. Let's take them one at a time. On Friday, March 30th, 1984, I was sitting at my little cubicle in the HTS offices in downtown Washington, D.C. Jody Shapiro, director of programming, came over from his office with a somber look. "This Baltimore Colts thing, it's a problem for us," he reported. "A big problem. You need to fix it." Our little cable channel wasn't even on the air yet. A group of about 20 of us had been working around the clock for months planning our debut for next Wednesday afternoon. We'd be televising the second game of the Orioles season, plus that night's Washington Capitals hockey playoff game. Having lost a team of my own 13 years earlier, my heart went out to Baltimore football fans. We'd read about the 14 Mayflower moving trucks that arrived less than 48 hours earlier on Wednesday night and early Thursday morning at the Colts training complex in Owings Mills. They packed up quickly, then scattered on their way to Indianapolis. But I didn't immediately grasp why this was a problem for HTS. "We need a photo for the set, and we need it right away," Jody fretted. I was the public relations manager, the guy with the pictures. For tasks like this, in those days, we needed a color slide and had only a precious few. Jody was worried about the larger-than-life backlit letters, HTS, the centerpiece of the humble set that would appear on live TV in just 5 days. The three-letter photo collage hung on the back wall between two comfy chairs. At the top of the letter T was a game photo capturing the intensity of offensive line play. The Colts' offensive line. Jody couldn't allow us to sign on the air with an image that might be perceived as taunting angry Baltimore fans. We scrambled, purchased a replacement slide, and fixed it. Like the Senators, the Colts had a universally disliked owner, Bob Irsay, who'd rudely challenged fans, media, and elected officials to support his failing franchise or else. Attendance had dwindled, averaging a little more than 38,000 in 1983. Only 20,418 showed up for what turned out to be their final game at Memorial Stadium, a win over the Houston Oilers. Ironically, the Oilers fled Houston for Tennessee 14 years later. Like Short, Irsay dangled his franchise in front of multiple cities looking for a better deal, infuriating loyal locals. At least I had a chance to say goodbye to my team that raucous night in 1971. Colts fans never had the opportunity. Once Maryland Governor Harry Hughes signed legislation giving the government the right to seize the franchise through eminent domain, Irsay took swift action. Within hours, the Colts had packed their bags and left town. The city licked its wounds over the weekend. When the sun rose Monday morning, the city enjoyed a day-long celebration of their latest championship. More than twice as many fans packed Memorial Stadium as had been there less than 4 months earlier for the Colts finale. The opening day crowd looked skyward, not for a plane buzzing the upper deck, as had happened only a few years earlier following a Colts game, but for the Oriole bird parachuting onto the field with a special delivery. The mascot handed the ball to President Ronald Reagan, who then threw a strike to 1983 World Series MVP Rick Dempsey. Accompanied by Orioles legend Brooks Robinson and manager Joe Altobelli, Dempsey then proudly marched to center field, where the trio hoisted the World Series champion banner. Commissioner Bowie Kuhn then handed out the championship rings. For a time, it seemed no one was thinking about the Colts. Perhaps it was fitting that a movie star turned politician running for re-election would grab the pregame spotlight prior to a home game on live local TV, something that had never happened before. At the time, team owners feared that home games on TV would hurt gate receipts. Conventional wisdom suggested that if home games were on TV, no one would buy tickets. That was about to change. This opening day was available to all on free TV, and as Bill Carter reported in that morning's Baltimore Sun, HTS would televise another 56 home games as part of its 90-game package. Few homes had cable TV at the time, including exactly no one in Baltimore City. Those who had cable had to pay an additional $15 or so per month for the HTS channel, so the theoretical impact on ticket sales in 1984 was minimal. It was a whirlwind week of change. The change for Colts fans was heartbreaking. Orioles fans would enjoy their team in a whole new way on TV. Things were changing for me as well. Just 6 months earlier, I was excited to experience playoff baseball for the first time. It was a memorable October night in Baltimore with my then fiance, Kate DeMarco. After my heavily favored White Sox took Game 1, their only win of the 1983 ALCS, Kate and I returned to my car, safely parked in a residential neighborhood nearby. My Chevy Chevette had been vandalized. The back window smashed with a rock. It was an omen. Perhaps the baseball gods had shattered the lens through which I had seen Baltimore all those years. The best view of Baltimore, or so I thought, was through the rearview mirror. That was about to change radically. Unbeknownst to me, in October, a seismic shift in my loyalty was coming, akin to Babe Ruth moving from the Red Sox to the Yankees. A month later, while on our honeymoon, I accepted the job at Home Team Sports. HTS is now NBC Sports Washington. I remember telling my parents I was leaving Charlie Brotman to go work for HTS, a startup cable TV channel. They thought I was crazy. For years, when friends asked where Michael was working, their response was something like, "That cable thing." by opening day, this Orioles-hating Senators fan who followed his team to Texas only to fall in love with the Chicago White Sox was now a fan of the Baltimore Orioles. It's funny how a team's contribution to a newlywed's livelihood can shift that allegiance overnight. For the box score, play-by-play, and more, visit openingday5050.com.